York City, border to border, and coast to coast, you're connected with Tom Sullivan.
Well, here we are, gathered around the old microphone, happy, what is this? Is this really just Tuesday? It's just Tuesday? Tuesday, the 7th day, December 7th, year of our Lord, 2021. My name is Tom Sullivan. Yes, December 7th, the 80th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So we've got some special programming for later in the show. But right now, Jake Sullivan, who I'm sure is not related, the National Security Advisor, is just coming to the microphone to brief the media at the White House about how the big talks went between Vlad and Joe. Let's listen in.
Everybody here today. As you all know, President Biden held a secure video call today with President Putin. The call covered a range of issues, but the main topic was Ukraine. President Biden was direct and straightforward with President Putin, as he always is. He reiterated America's support for Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. He told President Putin directly that if Russia further invades Ukraine, the United States and our European allies would respond with strong economic measures. We would provide additional defensive materiel to the Ukrainians above and beyond that which we are already providing. And we would fortify our NATO allies on the eastern flank with additional capabilities in response to such an escalation. He also told President Putin there's another option, de-escalation and diplomacy. The United States and our European allies would engage in a discussion that covers larger strategic issues, including our strategic concerns with Russia and Russia's strategic concerns. We managed to do this at the height of the Cold War, and we developed mechanisms to help reduce instability and increase transparency. We've done this in the post-Cold War era through the NATO-Russia Council, the OSCE, and other mechanisms. There's no reason we can't do that going forward, provided that we are operating in a context of de-escalation rather than escalation. The United States, as we have been for some time, is also prepared to support efforts to advance the Minsk Agreement in support of the Normandy format. This could include a ceasefire and confidence-building measures that helps drive the process forward. As I said before, the discussion between President Biden and President Putin was direct and straightforward. There was a lot of give and take. There was no finger wagging. But the president was crystal clear about where the United States stands on all of these issues. We believe from the beginning of this administration that there is no substitute for direct dialogue between leaders, and that is true in spades when it comes to the U.S.-Russia relationship. So President Biden welcomed the opportunity to engage clearly and directly with President Putin. Indeed, as President Biden said after his meeting in Geneva in June with President Putin, where we have differences, I want President Putin to understand why I say what I say and why I do what I do and how we'll respond to specific kinds of actions that harm America's interests and indeed harm our allies' interests. That's exactly what he did today. After the call, he spoke with the leaders of France, Germany, Italy, and the UK to debrief them on the call and to consult on the way forward. Our team is presently debriefing the embassies of NATO members, EU members, and key Indo-Pacific allies. The president will be speaking shortly with the leaders of both houses of Congress and talking to them about ways in which the administration and the Congress can work together on a bipartisan basis to stand up for American interests and values and stand behind our friends and partners. And President Biden will be speaking with President Zelensky on Thursday, following on yesterday's discussion between President Zelensky and Secretary Blinken. In terms of next steps, the President and President Putin agreed that our teams will follow up on the issues discussed today. The President and his European colleagues agreed that our teams will work together to ensure that our engagement with Russia going forward both involves and is closely coordinated with European allies and partners so that we are all on the same page. There's a lot of work to do in the days ahead. As we pursue diplomatic channels, we will also prepare for all contingencies, just as we have been doing for weeks now, including through the preparation of specific responses to Russian escalation, should they be required. Specific, robust, clear responses should they be required. That's where things stand as we speak, and with that, I'd be happy to take your questions. Yes?
Could you elaborate on what you said about fortifying allies on the eastern flank there? Is sending U.S. troops to the region on the table here?
So what I'm referring to there is in the event that there is a further invasion into Ukraine, a military escalation in Ukraine, obviously many of our partners on the Eastern Front, our Baltic allies, Romania, Poland, other countries, will be increasingly concerned about the security and territorial integrity of their countries. They will be seeking, we expect, additional capabilities and potentially additional deployments, and the United States will be looking to respond positively to those things in the event that there is a further incursion into Ukraine.
So is that something the American public should be bracing for, the possibility of seeing American troops on the ground in that region in the coming weeks and months if Vladimir Putin goes through with this?
I don't know if I would say bracing for, since we currently have rotational deployments in the Baltics. We conduct exercises on a regular basis in both Poland and Romania. The presence of American military service members in rotational fashion in these countries is not something new. The question here is not that about whether or not the United States is going to send American service members to the territory of our NATO allies. We do that as a matter of course. The question is, what additional capabilities can we provide to ensure that they feel strong and confident in their own sovereignty and territorial integrity? It is those additional capabilities that are on the table in those countries should Russia move in Ukraine in a more decisive way. Yes.
Okay, thanks so much. In the days leading up to this call, the White House and administration officials said repeatedly their assessment so far was that Putin had not made a decision over whether to invade Ukraine. So did President Biden get clarity from him on whether or not that is his intention?
We still do not believe that President Putin has made a decision. What President Biden did today was lay out very clearly the consequences if he chooses to move. He also laid out an alternative path that is fundamentally in keeping with the basic principles and propositions that have guided America in the Euro-Atlantic area for the past 70 years. And ultimately, we will see in the days ahead through actions, not through words, what course of action Russia chooses to take.
Yes. One quick follow-up. In your statement of the readout of the call, you said that the President Biden told him the United States was ready to take strong economic measures and other actions if needed. What are those other measures that the United States is referring to?
I just spelled those out in my opening remarks, both the supply and provision of additional materiel, as well as the additional deployment of assets and capabilities to NATO members in the event that there's a further incursion.
What are the strong economic measures, and how are they different from the ones you put on Russia in 2014, which didn't deter Russia from taking Crimea? What are they, and why do you think they'll work better this time?
I will look you in the eye and tell you, as President Biden looked President Putin in the eye and told him today, that things we did not do in 2014, we are prepared to do now. Now, in terms of the specifics, we would prefer to communicate that directly to the Russians, to not negotiate in public, to not telegraph our punches, but we are laying out for the Russians in some detail the types of measures that we have in mind. We are also coordinating very closely with our European allies on that at a level of deep specificity. We have experts from the Treasury Department, the State Department, and the National Security Council in daily contact with the key capitals and with Brussels to work through that package of measures. But I think it is not profitable for us to lay out the specifics of it standing here at this podium today.
Thank you. Did President Putin ask for President Biden to commit to not allow NATO or Ukraine to join NATO? And did President Biden make any kinds of concessions, such as a reduced U.S. presence or any commitment on NATO and Ukraine's membership?
I'm not going to characterize President Putin's side of the conversation or go into details in terms of what they discuss, because I think they need to have that space to be able to have a robust exchange. But I will tell you clearly and directly, he made no such commitments or concessions. He stands by the proposition that countries should be able to freely choose who they associate with.
The material that you said that you're going to send, following up on Caitlin's question, how quickly can that be delivered?
We have an ongoing pipeline that delivers various forms of defensive assistance to Ukraine. Indeed, there was the delivery of defensive assistance to Ukraine just very recently, and that will continue. So it really depends on the type or form, but this should not be thought of as a circumstance in which you completely turn off the dial or turn on the dial. There is an ongoing pipeline. Whether that pipeline needs additional supplements as we go forward will depend on how circumstances evolve. Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. You have said that the administration will take action if Russia does escalate militarily. Satellite images show that hundreds of Russian troops are amassing on the border with Ukraine. Isn't there already a military escalation underway? Why wait to take action?
So our view on this is that the fundamental object of the policy the United States is pursuing in lockstep with our European allies is to deter a Russian military invasion of further territory of Ukraine. And the measures we have put on the table are designed to show the Russian government that should it choose to engage in such an invasion, there will be those consequences. That for us is a clear and decisive lay down. And we also believe that there should be an alternative pathway by which we can make progress on diplomacy in the Donbas through the Minsk agreement and the Normandy format, and by which we can address NATO and American security concerns and Russian security concerns through a larger mechanism consistent with the way we've operated over the course of the past 30 years.
Some Republicans are accusing President Biden of being too weak on President Putin. They cite the fact that sanctions were eased on Nord Stream 2 and the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which was widely criticized. How do you respond to that criticism that President Biden is being too weak with Mr. Putin?
I make 3 points. The first is that Vladimir Putin, standing behind then-President Medvedev in 2008, invaded Georgia when we had 150,000 or more troops deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan. So the connection between our deployments in foreign wars and the calculus of Russian leaders when it comes to the post-Soviet space, there's not good evidence to support that. Number two, when it comes to Nord Stream 2, the fact is that gas is not currently flowing through the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which means that it's not operating, which means that it's not leverage for Putin. Indeed, it is leverage.
It's built, it's ready to go, and it's just they're about ready to do business through the pipeline. We're going to take your calls, your reaction to the meeting between Putin and Biden when we come back. Do not go away.
Unlike most talk hosts, he actually takes your calls live. You're with
all right, so let's just talk about you and me. Let's just talk about this whole business about this phone call today. I don't know how much you know about it. We have, what's interesting is what we know about it, we know because of the Russian media. I find it terribly ironic that we, for decades and decades during the Cold War, would talk about how the poor Russian people, the Russian government would keep them in the dark, only provide them with Pravda, which was Russian state government news, and what a terrible life they must have over there. And instead, today, we have our president would not allow the media to be in and video or show or broadcast the big meeting. And instead, we get our news from government sources, whether it's Jen Psaki or Jake Sullivan. Do you not see what's going on? Our government is trying to run the messaging. I get that they want to do that. And they will not show us live video or anything else of what went on in that room. But Russia did. Russia's not afraid of showing what goes on. Russia's not afraid of having the media broadcast the conversation. Don't you find that odd? I was fairly young guy in business, and I had a meeting with a company that was a client of mine and their lawyers. And I can't remember what the meeting was about, but there was a lawyer on the opposite side of the whole equation. And he and I turned out, he was old enough to be my father, but he and I turned out to be good friends. I loved the guy. And what he told me was, he came into this room, and it's a conference room, and there was probably 10 people at this conference table, and he walks in the very last after everybody else had been seated, and he sits down, and he crosses his, folds his hands together and says, let's begin. And I looked, and he did not have a piece of paper. He did not have a pen. All the other lawyers in the room were writing furiously everything that everybody said. I asked him about that later, and I said, why did you not have a piece of paper, nothing, not a pen? You sat there with your hands folded. And he told me it was part of the head trip, the psychic stuff of basically doing a power play on the other people in the room. I have all the knowledge right here in my head. I don't need to have a bunch of law books and a briefcase with a bunch of files in it. I don't have to take copious notes. I don't have to do any of that. I know what I'm doing, and I'm exhibiting that I am knowledgeable and in charge. And the rest of you peons are sitting around the table writing as furiously as you possibly can. And I thought about that lesson that he taught me many, many years ago. He says, the when you go into a meeting, the most powerful person in the meeting doesn't have a piece of paper or a pen and doesn't take any notes. So I'm reminded of that story from today. I'm looking at, there is a still photo of President Biden in the Situation Room underneath the White House. And there are members of his cabinet. I believe they are. There's four people at the table with President Biden. And everybody's got paper and pen, and everybody's writing stuff. Everybody looks like they're, you know, there to give Joe Biden advice. Meantime, Vladimir Putin, and he does this all the time, he sits back in a chair. He doesn't sit up straight. He kind of lays back in the chair, kind of like, yeah, I'm Mr. Cool. He doesn't have his coat button. He's very casual about everything. He doesn't take any notes. He had some paper in front of him, but he was obviously doing the power play of, I'm the one in charge of this meeting. So we can debate all of this, but what Jake Sullivan said, I think, is right, is that we'll find out who has a good poker hand and who does not.
He likes it when you talk back, Tom Sullivan.
I do indeed. So I can't help but recall the 2012 debate between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Here's just a little snippet of it.
Governor Romney, I'm glad that you recognize that al-Qaeda is a threat. Because a few months ago, when you were asked what's the biggest geopolitical threat facing America, you said Russia. Not al-Qaeda, you said Russia. In the 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back.
Yep. 1980s are calling for... Yep. Looks like the business expert was right. Or is it? Is Russia really a threat to us? I went over this yesterday about, do you care if they invade Ukraine? Ukraine used to be part of Russia, of the Soviet Union. They have an affinity for it. They have a passion for it. They have family and relatives that are Ukrainian. They have intermarried What do, I mean, I know we have Ukrainians living in America, but not this isn't an issue that most Americans go around being worried about. The big worry is this is Putin, who is a strategist, and he's going, they want to make it NATO. They want them to be part of NATO. I don't want them to be part of NATO. So what I have to do is I have to destroy NATO and show that when I invade Ukraine, they will do nothing. And then it brings up the whole question. Jake Sullivan was talking about, I made a few notes there, about the fact that the U.S. will respond with a strong economic measure or measures. And if he does invade Ukraine, we will fortify Ukraine and others with military equipment. Or we can do diplomacy. Think about this for a second. So you're Vladimir Putin. You are probably, A, you would like to get Ukraine back under the Soviet, the Russian flag. And B, you would love to stir up and destroy the West, especially NATO. So they're going to send, if I invade, they will send all kinds of military equipment to fortify the Ukrainians. We can send all the military fortification in the world. They can't stand up to Russia. Russia is ready with 175,000 troops right on the border. It'd be over in a day. Joe Biden got off the phone call, and what did he do? He picked up the phone to call and talk to European Union leaders, leaders of European countries. Joe is more European than anybody else. And what's so weird about this is that Europe is now relying upon Russia for their heat in the winter. What do you think the European Union is going to do? What do you think Germany's going to do? I'm sorry, Joe, but you know, we need our heater. I mean, my people here in Germany are going to be having me thrown out of. I mean, I can't do it. So, I mean, I appreciate your problem, but you can go ahead and send all that military equipment, but I'm still buying the oil from Russia. Phone number is 855-295-6600. Dr. K in Virginia. Hello, Dr. K.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
You commented earlier on the fact that the United States did not show the meeting and that Russia was showing it.
About the bravado or what?
You commented earlier, I believe, that the United States was not showing the actual meeting, whereas the Russian media.
Oh, yes, yes, as far as, yes, television, yes, Russian television was showing it.
I mean, I don't find that very odd from an optics standpoint. I mean, I believe that, you know, the president, unfortunately, probably has some cognitive issues and cannot carry on a strong conversation, whereas there are, from a Russian standpoint, Putin likes to look strong and
yes,
in control, just as you were saying about someone you've known previously. So
right,
to me, it wasn't surprising at all that that was the situation. I would likely believe that President Biden had a read that he did on talking points, and then thereafter probably didn't play too much of a role. It's probably his advisors that advised thereafter. Wouldn't you suspect?
I think you're right. And I appreciate your alluding to the fact that there's things that he doesn't want, he wants to keep secret. I just found the optics to be fascinating, where we used to be the wide open freedom of the press, anybody and everybody, we're the beacon of liberty and freedom, and here we are hiding the meeting, and Russia is showing it. I found it somewhat humorous. How that has changed.
Oh, yeah, I find that to be completely ironic as well, that we are the ones not showing it. What do you think of the whole Ukraine situation? It seems to be that Russia wants a buffer zone from it and the West, and also like access to the warm water ports. Do you think anything will come of this, or do you think this will be a insurrection, quote unquote, that's aided by the Russians, or what do you think will end up happening?
I never thought about the insurrection part. I mean, they half of Ukraine is basically in the hands of Russian affinity, and the other half is not. So I don't understand Ukraine well enough to know how powerful or how passionate the people that don't want anything to do with Russia, how much control they have and how much defense they have. I don't think they can stand up to the giant. Maybe they can. Maybe the people will keep pushing back. Do you think? Well, but more importantly is what does... There are many important things that Russia is trying to do to make sure that he would like to destroy NATO, and this is part of one of the pieces of the puzzle, is to get into Ukraine and stand there and say, now what are you going to do? And he wants that buffer. He doesn't want the NATO people there. None of this, I mean, I don't think there's a lot of people in the U.S. that are willing to shed not one drop of American soldier blood, nor a lot of our money. Why? I mean, if anything else, I get calls from people all the time saying the military-industrial complex is alive and well, and now that Afghanistan is kind of over, what are we going to do? We need contracts. Okay, well, we'll send more equipment over to Ukraine. I almost feel like there's some legitimacy to that.
I think you're absolutely right. I think the Americans have no desire for any sort of conflict in this point. I would just hope that with the monetary might of the EU and the Americans, we could allow peace in that region, monetarily speaking. But I'll get off the line. Thank you.
Well, no, but let me ask you. Let me ask another question because you're right there by DC. Why don't we squeeze them harder? We can. We just won't. We don't. Why not? Do we need them to be there to be our foil?
I just don't know the answer, Tom. I don't know enough. One last comment I'll make is there's a good book that I started reading. It's published in the last few years called Prisoners of Geography. I don't know if you've read it, but it outlines basically Russia's interest in Poland and Crimea and whatnot. Also outlines much of the world, China, United States, and things like that. But I'll get off the line, Tom. I bid you a good day. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the call. It does, seriously, I mean, there isn't a soul out there that says we could squeeze them economically. We are militarily much stronger, economically much stronger. They're nothing. China? No, that's a whole different story. China is a much bigger deal. But Russia, not so much. But we play along almost as if we're playing part in a play.
Opinions that matter. Radio that makes you think.
So they had a two-hour, 20-minute meeting, the President of the United States and the President of Russia, and we will see whether there was just a lot of posturing or whether or not there is actually going to be a movement into Ukraine from Russia. Alexander the Great, is there? You know they can bet on anything, right? Do you know if there's a sports book on this? Because I bet there is. Do you think Vlad's going to do it or not? Or is he just messing with us simply because he enjoys doing that? 855-295-6600. Jim in Wichita, Kansas. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, by the way, are you old enough to remember when Bob Dole was your senator?
Yes.
I mean, he kind of stayed in Washington. But he was from Kansas.
Yes, is there anything? Russell, Kansas, where he was born. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think Putin has the better poker hand here, and I think he's going to call Biden for a lot. He has too many interests in Eastern Europe. He needs a buffer zone. He doesn't like NATO putting a noose around his neck. He wants NATO out of there. And so I have no doubt he's going to do whatever he wants to do. Sanctions be damned. You don't amass 175,000 troops on a neighboring country's border just for show. And he's been modernizing his nuclear arsenal, which I'm sure he didn't do that, just parade down Gorky Street on a May Day parade. So if the United States keeps threatening sanctions and economic this and that, he's got nukes that he can send over here.
Nah, he's not going to.
You keep messing with. You don't
No, I don't. I think the nukes are a fascinating topic, but I don't think it's just like the Cold War. We said, you know what I have? Do you know what I'm going to do?
No.
And we didn't do anything, and they didn't do anything.
Hypersonic nukes changed the ball game, Tom. China's building them. Russia's building them. I think they intend to use them if America gets too much out of hand. But, yeah, I think he's going to call Biden's bluff on this one. I don't think he believes that Biden's going to do half of what he says he's going to do, and I don't think it matters to him.
Why is it? All right, Mr. Democrat, Mr. Left Side of the Aisle. Why is it that these rogue actors are all of a sudden in this last year starting to pound their chest?
They've been pounding their chest for decades. Khrushchev pounded the table of the UN with his shoe.
I know.
Which he ceded the Crimea to Ukraine just as a political gesture in 1952 because it didn't matter. They were all one country then. So
right.
For America to make a big stink about the Crimea and the Ukraine sovereignty, Russia says that's baloney. They've historically both territories have been a part of Russia. Kiev was once the capital of Russia.
Yeah.
So I can't blame Putin for wanting it all back. Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia were the original constituents of the Soviet Union in 1922.
I also agree with sanctions, because sanctions never work. But there are some things that we could do that would be devastating to them if we started to really mess with their oil and gas business, number one. And the second thing is the international banking system. We could put the brakes on that. They need.
We could, but China could take up the slack on that.
They could.
They're trying to put the IMF out of business and have been trying to do that for quite a while now.
Right.
They want. Yeah. So, you know, Russia could look for China for economic backing if they could.
So.
But. I've got a lot of Putin supporting friends, and I've talked to them over the years about this. And I asked them, why isn't Putin getting off his ass and finishing what he started in the Ukraine in 2014? He says, well, he's playing a chess game. I said, what about all the armaments that America's sending over there? They said, that's fine. That's just more ordnance for Russia to hit and destroy when they do go in.
Or
they're not worried about
or for them to take and use for their own military. When they march in there and take over the country.
Sure. China's doing that in Afghanistan now. They're reverse engineering everything that America left there.
So we send a bunch of military armament over to Ukraine. Putin says, okay, when are you going to have that stuff here? Because the day after it arrives, I'm going to march in and take over the country. And then I'll have all your military equipment free of charge.
That's right. Yeah. So... I expect the Russian flag to be flying over the Ukrainian parliament by the beginning of next year. And I wouldn't be surprised if China takes Taiwan by then. That's what my friends are telling me, too.
Before
Christmas, China's going into Taiwan. So
I think both will happen, and I think they'll happen maybe within the year. It could be next week. We don't know. But I think this is their opportunity, and they see a bunch of people that are diplomats who don't want to. They won't lift a finger other than we need a meeting. That's all they think about.
Yeah,
Putin is about power.
Of opportunity, they'd be fools not to. So yeah. I expect something to come down hard.
Well, I'm not going to bet against you. I think you're going to be right. All right, Jim, always good to talk to you. Steve in California. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So I don't think Russia has the potential it had. Let's say this. It currently doesn't have the potential it had in the 60s and 70s and the 80s. But I think it does have the potential to be there again. I think they're buying time to build their arsenal, to take parts and pieces of the Soviet Union used to be. It's similar to what Germany did pre-World War II when they, were looking for Lebensraum or living space, right? They wanted a buffer zone between them and Russia. They wanted to have room to grow. And I think that Russia may be playing the same card, that they're looking for those little bits and pieces. The Germans said, hey, we just want this and then we're done. And I think that Russia is playing the same card as far as we just want a little bit until we get big enough to say we don't need to tell you what we want anymore.
Yeah. Ukraine's also important to them. For shipping their oil to Eastern Europe and Western Europe goes through Ukraine. So NATO, oil shipments, there's a lot of reasons, but I think you're right that Vladimir Putin just wants it all back. That was his dream, Mother Russia. So I got to hit a break, but Steve, I'm glad we got you in. We'll be right back.